Today is September 30th, season 3, episode 33. That's a lot of threes, Decky. How are we doing today?
Dude, we're feeling great, Andy. Adversity. You didn't even give me a nickname. What am I this week?
Decky Shoulder Plane.
Decky Shoulder Plane, dude. They're about to film a documentary on these shoulders. But what they should film a documentary on is our guest this week, James Farrow. He has a pretty amazing story. We got to know him because we were challenged by Mary Lavor, who is a recent podcast guest of ours. And then another podcast of ours, Austin Harrington, who we played with at St. Thomas, was his adopted brother, which is very cool. His family took in James in seventh grade. But you guys are going to love his story about playing D1 football, transferring, becoming a musician, having that as his fuel source for his story, and everything that he's done is pretty incredible from LA to New York to here.
Awesome story, Jimmy. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing it.
Let's get it.
Just talking to my buddy Brandon on the phone from Social Butterfly.
Yes,
Pulitzer. He said he was just on. I still butcher his last name to this day. I talk to him a few times a week. We link up. We've done tons of business together. I did Lincoln Drink, and I still butcher his last name.
Mm-hmm. And so, Pulitzer, I think.
Pulitzer. Say Pulitzer.
Yeah.
Pulitzer.
That works too, though.
If he's gonna see this and be pissed. Yeah. Sorry, Brandon.
But you crushed that Lincoln Drink, right? That where you were sitting in the back, and it was kind of loud because that room kind of echoed a little bit. Mm-hmm. But when it was your turn to talk, or when you were willing to participate, you just killed it, and you were providing value, and I really appreciated the time that you gave all of the audience. So,
of course,
well done,
man. Yeah, thank you, man. And there's so many people that came up after that didn't necessarily get to ask questions, and so that was even cooler because I actually got to have a full conversation with kids and just kind of give them my insight, talk about my failures. And, you know, some of the things I did wrong, because I feel like that's where the best advice comes from, is like, here's how I messed up. I don't know if I can swear on here. Here's where I fucked up. and you know, don't make the same mistakes. And you go into a little more detail than that. But I feel like that means a lot more to people than being like, yeah, man, you can be anything you want to be. Just keep grinding. Grind mode. Hashtag. Like, that's all crap. You got to tell people how you messed up. And, mm-hmm. and that's where the real advice and the real value shows.
Absolutely.
I agree.
And I think this is a great opportunity to dive right in and break down your story, Farrow. We know you a little bit, talked off air, and heard you at Lincoln Drink. Mm-hmm. We listened to you on Austin Harrington's AOG podcast.
AOG, shout out, merch just dropped.
Yes, sir. Love that. But our marketing interns, our listeners, don't necessarily know you.
Yeah.
And I would love to start when you got, at high school, when you're getting those offers to go play the next level in college, because you're talking to two ex-athletes that were involved in the recruiting process and realized how draining and exhausting it is just to show your worth to other people.
Yeah.
And we're doing it to Division III schools and a couple D1AA, mm-hmm. and you're doing it at the highest level. So I'd love to break down that recruiting process and kind of your mindset throughout high school.
Dude, I was like dead set on going D1. I don't know if you guys listen to hip-hop music that much, but it seems like every hip-hop artist is like, oh, my teacher said I wasn't going to be shit. It's like, yeah, fucking right. No teacher's going up to some kid being like, you know what, Jimmy, you're not going to be shit ever. Like, that's all crap. In my case, it was my coaches. So I had no idea I even had D1 offers to start, because my coach was getting all my mail and he was keeping it from me for whatever reason. If he wanted me to be focused on the team, focused on, you know, the summer workouts or whatever it was. So I actually didn't even know I had D1 offers. And so I ended up going home, making my own highlight film based on my past year, cut it up myself, edited it myself. It was crap looking back on it now.
What song did you put to it in the background?
It was, oh God, I think it was Fireman, Lil Wayne, Fireman.
Oh, yeah. Oh shit.
Yeah, Fireman, Fireman. Yeah, I think that's what it was. But I ended up making my own film, and then I would call coaches every day after school. You can find like a directory online. You can find in the directory like links to the different offices and, you know, whatever. And I would call coaches every single day after school for 2 hours and just be like, hey, like, can I talk to, you know, so-and-so? Can I talk to so-and-so?
Were you going like, top programs like Big Ten School, ACC, top of the line?
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, it's like anything. Once you get your first offer, the rest just start flooding in. Mm. But I actually committed to the U of M to start. That's where my dad played. And so I wanted to follow in his footsteps. And I was what Tim Brewster, and so I actually this is I don't think anyone knows this story, but I'll tell it. So I'm committed to the U of M, right? Big recruit, it was like a huge deal, and I was really happy about it, following my my father's footsteps. But
not to brag,
I went
number
to,
one player in Minnesota at the time, right?
What Tommy Olsen and me, depending on where you look, because I've posted this before, being like, you know, posted one of my highlights, like throwback to being the number one player. And Tommy replied, and he goes, number one with the little eyes. And so there's a little rivalry that I love Tommy, though.
Okay.
But so I go to one of the practices where they had, like, they invited their recruits or whatever. And so I went up to Tim Brewster. Hey, you know, hi, Coach Brewster. Just want to say hello, you know, whatever. Shook his hand. And when he shook my hand, he was, like, looking around the room and, like, didn't look at me or really even acknowledge me. I decommitted that day.
Wow.
Whoa.
Decommitted that day. I was like, fuck this guy.
The power of eye contact.
Yeah, man. Show some respect when you meet somebody. Or, you know, when you're talking to someone. I'd already met him. He offered me the whole shebang.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm supposed to be a big recruit. You're not showing me any love. You're looking around like I don't exist. And whatever it was that he had on his mind, I don't know, but it cost him his top recruit in the recruiting class at the time.
Damn.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that just speaks to you out of looking in peer evaluation, and like you're on it. You're evaluating the person across from you right away.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So from there, you're calling all these coaches. So mm-hmm. were you getting letters or finding out you got letters?
Yeah.
And then basically calling the respective university coach or
recruiting coordinator? Yeah. So I had like, you know, a list of, first of all, I can't believe that, like, I can't believe the recruiting process. The way that they let a 16-year-old decide his future, it's insane. Because I had a whole list of schools that I completely blocked off because they were sponsored by Adidas. And I'm not joking. I'm not joking. I was like 16. I'm like, Michigan, can't do it. It's got to be Nike. And like me, Austin, my brother Austin, we were on the same page. I was like, yo, if it's Adidas, like, gross. This mm-hmm. is before Adidas came back, like, being a much trendier.
Sure.
Yeah. This is when Adidas was still like, oh, come on. It was like yeah. Under Armour cleats. You know what I mean? It's like, dude.
The Land Sharks, of
yeah,
course.
Yeah, you get busted in those things, man. And so, yeah, so I had, you know, blocked off a whole batch of schools that were great programs simply because they were sponsored by Adidas. That, to me, is insane that I even had that option. Like, that is sick, dude. There's got to be something done in the recruiting process. I don't know what it is. But it's the same thing with student loans. Like, you're letting an 18-year-old kid take out a $180,000 loan. Like, that is so crazy to me that they let us do that. And, you know, you do it because that's your only option, or you think it is. You don't get taught anything about it in school. Like, you don't understand the responsibility you're taking on. Like, that is nuts. And then when you're actually responsible and you're 30 and you want a $180,000 loan, they're like, can't do it.
Don't trust you anymore.
Yeah, you can't do
it. Don't trust you anymore. And no, by the way, like, your credit score is not good enough to, like, buy a car because you're $100,000 in debt.
Yeah, dude, it's insane. It's nuts. But yeah, so I was calling coaches every day, and I would call the top programs, ask for the head coach, and you'd be surprised how many times I got him. And I'd be like, hey, coach, I had sent over my film. I just want to check and see if you watched it. And he'd go, oh, you know, we'll watch it this week and give us a call back. And I'd give him a call back, and that's how it worked. And they would actually answer. And you know, I don't know what it's like now, but at the time, that's what I was doing. And I got so many different scholarship offers, along with going to every single camp I could. I probably went to like 30 camps, because Minnesota doesn't get as much respect as far as like
either
athletics
does Colorado.
And football.
I was from Colorado.
Yeah, you know, so you got to go out of state. And so I know, like, we went down to Florida, we went to Michigan, Michigan State, we went to Indiana, you know, we went wherever we possibly could to go ball out at these Nike camps and the invite-only camps and all that stuff. And that's why I got a lot of my scholarship offers.
I also want to say, how much of a racket are those camps? Like, invite only is one thing.
Yeah.
And that those have, you know, XYZ sponsors. And those all those kids typically are elite.
Mm-hmm.
But, like,
no, there's the showcases.
The showcases.
That are trash.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, $400 and you could have your dreams. You're just preying on kids that, and their parents who feel like they don't want to hinder their kid from, you know, doing what they want to do, whatever. But they're charging so much money, just like preying on kids' dreams. I had a guy that helped me and Austin with recruiting. He's an absolute scam. He's an absolute scam. He'd be like, oh, you know, I'm in touch with Ball State and da-da-da and all these different places. And so finally we went to Ball State. This was for Austin, my brother's recruiting. And they'd never even heard of this guy. Like, he was taking a few $100 a week from us, saying he was calling and doing all this stuff on our behalf. Nothing. And it's just, you're preying on people's dreams and, you know, the parents that feel like they want to give their kid the world
mm-hmm.
and give them the best chance that they have. And that was really fucked up to me.
Yeah, I agree. It was definitely tougher being like the kid who was like the zero star recruit white kid who wasn't like that good.
Oh no. Being white in football is probably the worst thing.
Oh man, it was awful.
That is, and I truly, truly think that mm-hmm. like you want to talk about racism. Like the only way that a straight white male can be like accused of having racist things happen to them is in athletics.
Yes.
Like then you are actually discriminated against. Like, yes, if you have two people of the same athleticism, same skill set, and one is black, one is white, you're going D1, you're not. Like, that's fucked. Mm-hmm. And so, and maybe you bring that up in an argument when someone's like, oh, you're a straight white male. Like, how can you say that? You know, you're like, listen, I've been discriminated against. And you can be like, hey, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's what you got in your back pocket right mm-hmm. there. There you go.
I played cornerback, so I mean, that's like
oh, skill position?
Skill
oh,
position,
yeah, you're
DB, you're not getting a lot of love out there.
If you were light-skinned like me, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
They might have gave you a little more love.
Yeah, see, like, when I went on my tour around, I went on the East Coast primarily because mm-hmm. I had, like, a decent ACT score. I wanted to go to Catholic school, so I went to, like, Villanova, Bucknell, Penn, Princeton, Brown, like I hit all those ones
mm-hmm.
and it was so funny, like it would be like a kind of a predominantly like average white guy camp, but yeah. then like one black kid would show up and he would just torch everybody,
ball out,
and they're like giving this kid all the props, like I'm sure they handed him a scholarship on his way out, like
oh,
it was
yeah.
just like so funny to watch a college coach just get like starry-eyed over like his one prospect yeah. amongst the other 500 they don't give a shit about.
Dude,
it's so funny.
It's yeah. sad, dude, because I watched it with Austin. Like, Austin would go to these camps and tear these kids up. Black, white, Asian, didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
He would go to these camps.
Quick
run one-on-ones, and he caught everything. He had great routes. And, like, his biggest problem was that he was a white kid. Had he been a black kid, I think his recruiting process would have been a lot different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he would admit that. Maybe he wouldn't. He might be too humble to say it out loud, but I'll say it for him. I'm a little more outspoken than my brother is.
Mm-hmm.
But, I watched it firsthand. It was, you know, such a bummer.
Yep.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah.
And then you end up committing to Virginia Tech.
Yeah, it was after a long process. I decided, like, after my junior season, that I was going to go to Virginia Tech. I took an official visit there. It was between Virginia Tech and Miami. So I got a lot of family in Miami. And so I kind of was like, I wanted to be with my family, reconnect with that side.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something about Virginia Tech that just was like, dude, all the DBs that went there that started two or more years, like got drafted for like 7 years running. This is when they were like top five in the country. And I was like, dude, this is my chance to go to the pros. If I can start 2 years here, like redshirt a year, sit behind someone a year, and then start, you know, 2 years after that, I'm like, you're going to get drafted. You're going to get a shot. And so that's like where my mindset was. Mm-hmm. And they were sponsored by Nike.
Dope. Yep.
And so I was like, dude, I'm in.
Yeah, you had this killer mindset going in, but you still had this love for music. And mm-hmm. that love was starting to gain a lot more traction because you're at Virginia Tech for now 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, things are switching, the tides are turning, you're ready to invest into music a little bit more heavily. Walk me through that experience of deciding no longer to play football and to invest a little bit more into your music career.
Yeah, so it had my time playing football, I was never in love with the game. I loved the prestige. I loved everyone watching me and being the star and, like, you know, being attention whore, whatever you want to call it. That's the part that I loved about sports in general. But with music, that's where I would, you know, find my passion, where I'd be in my bedroom by myself, like having the time of my life, just making music. And so since I was in high school, I had a little bedroom set up, and then I bought an even better one when I got to college. So even when I first got there that first summer, I had a whole music set up in my dorm room, and I'd be recording after practice and all that type of stuff. But I stopped playing because I just got a bunch of different injuries and just got burnt out. And so I think I told this to Austin too. I Googled farthest city from Blacksburg, Virginia, and it was like LA and San Diego, and I'd never even been to California. And so then I just called up the coaches at San Diego and told them I wanted to play there and transfer just so I could get in. And then I got there and didn't play. And then I started making music more seriously.
Gotcha.
Joined a fraternity, and then all my fraternity brothers, like, got on board with all my music stuff. And so I started doing concerts, open up for Kid Ink when he was like huge that summer.
No way.
Yeah. And so that's kind of how, like, things really took a turn towards music.
The injury bug,
like, really,
it's exhausting.
Yeah, and it was really organic though. It wasn't like mm-hmm. okay, this is my next thing. It was just, this is what I've always done.
Sure.
And so once I started doing some shows, I got some recognition. Some people in LA wanted to work with me. So I moved up to LA with one of my buddies. And yeah, then it kind of went from there. Insane.
You moved up to LA from San Diego.
Yeah.
And did you finish school at San Diego?
No, I still have like 24 credits left. Okay. My parents are pissed about. So I'm like 24. I'm like a semester and a half away from my finance degree.
Okay.
But I was like, dude, I'm making music. I've already done so many things in business now. Not a lot of people know this, but I own a car dealership out in Andover. Me and two of my buddies bought it maybe a year ago. So I'm always doing like business stuff, and I'm working on closing a deal actually tomorrow. Hopefully if I can get called back on this, I can tell you guys more about that and how it went. But I got some cool stuff on the business side of things that I think I use some of my education, but it's all experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think getting a degree right now in my life wouldn't do a single thing.
Yeah, that's what I was going to touch on. Like, it's not that it's not worth it for those people that are in college, but for the experiences and the opportunities that you were given at the time, it makes perfect sense. But when you were at USD, I know you had that was like a good launch pad for your music career. My sister went to USD for 2 years, and I know is just like the biggest party school of all time. So like, was it that party culture that acted as a launch pad, or was there like, yeah,
there's SDSU USD. And USD.
Mm-hmm.
So SDSU is actually like known as the party school it in is, San Diego. USD is like, it's like the St. Thomas of San Diego.
Okay. But those guys throw down, and they have just so much money in that school. Oh, it's insane.
Dude, it was nuts. But I don't know. I think, dude, joining a fraternity was probably like the biggest leap of faith for me that I've had, in, at least up to this point in my life. Because I was like so out on that. Like, I'm like, oh, you're paying for friends? Like, what kind of shit is that? You know what I mean? I'm like, cool, you like got parties and stuff. But like, I didn't really care about that type of thing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I met a kid in class, and he was in that fraternity, and he was like, dude, just rush. And like, I asked around, and this was like the best fraternity on campus. So I decided to suicide rush. Didn't rush a single other one. I was like, if I get in, cool. If I don't, then whatever. Then I'm not going to do it. And it ended up being one of the coolest experiences, man. It's just like football, basketball, whatever. It's like a team sport, except for the sport is partying and like hooking up with chicks, right?
Yep.
But it was just like, it was so much more of a brotherhood than I thought it would be.
That's dope.
Really cool.
Sweet. So going to LA, living with your buddy, trying to make it in the music scene. Walk me through that, man. That's a freaking leap of faith in itself.
Yeah, dude. I mean, we lived in a shithole apartment in the butthole of Hollywood, which everyone who's not from LA like thinks like, oh, Hollywood, like it's amazing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you think Hollywood's the place to be. Hollywood is trash. Anyone that like has lived in LA for a year or so moves out of Hollywood so quickly because it is like the worst part of LA.
Just and not a lot of money invested in there, or just
no, it's just, dude, it's traffic, just the dirtiest, most touristy, doesn't feel like California. It's landlocked. Like, it is just, oh, it's garbage. And I was like the starry-eyed kid from Minnesota being like, oh, I'm moving to Hollywood, baby. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm probably on my story. Like, let's go. And then I get there and it's just so garbage.
Yeah, when we've talked about this a few times, of like going out to LA, like how that changed Back Pocket's trajectory. Mm-hmm. And we know that we would get chewed up and spitting out alive.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
But right now, sorry. We don't know.
Yeah, right now, going in, we were like, we need to lay a foundation that has just, it's extremely sturdy, that if we do see failure, we can continue to push through it. Mm-hmm. And I like applaud you for going in blind, like having really no foundation and just taking it on, whatever comes to you.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if I did it again, I'd do it so much differently than I did the first time, just because like we were talking about, experience is the end all be all for knowing what to do in life.
Yeah.
So if I did it again, which I may not, I don't know. I would do it so much differently though. And so like with you guys, I don't think you guys would get chewed up and spit out in LA. Like, there's, because all you guys are doing is going to a place to have people talk about themselves in a place that everyone wants to talk about themselves.
That's a good point.
Like, you guys are offering so much value, right? So I was coming to LA trying to get value. You know what I mean? You guys are going and bringing value. And obviously, it works both ways with you guys in this type of platform.
Mm-hmm.
I think you guys could do really well if you had, you know, a little springboard of like hitting up people in your network. Like, who do I know in LA? Who does this person know in LA? Can you set some things up for the first couple months and then keep, you know, networking and out from
use
there?
That as the foundation.
Yeah, if you guys could just set up your first 3 months and have those locked in with some really cool people that you guys are excited about, I think you guys could do really well in LA.
All right, now I see. Oh, yeah, now that makes more sense. Yeah.
I don't know if we really ever thought it through.
No, I see that. For sure.
Yeah, like, you guys are offering value. You know what I'm saying? It's not just like you're going and trying to make it as an actress.
Yeah.
Sure. You know
that's a good point. And I think, like, kind of what you're getting at is it's not like I think Andrew and I, what we're trying to work on right now is like trying to find the people that need the value because we're here to provide it. Like, we're more or less amplifiers, like, for anyone that wants to amplify their brand, what they're doing and how they're doing it, then you come on the back pocket. And we've built an amplification formula or a platform to do so. So it would be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah.
I'm very interested.
Dude, there's some cool stuff that you guys can do with this type of platform, even in the cities, to get like bigger people, like figuring out a deal with like some of the people that own the venues for like music artists.
And
obviously that's where my thoughts are, right? Is music.
Yeah.
Like figuring out who, you know, owns the different establishments, and when they have someone come in, being like, hey, can we like add on $300 to have this guy come stop by, or can we set up in his green room and do a quick 30-minute podcast with, you know, XYZ artists, or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like P&B Rock or so, you know, whoever's in town.
Mm-hmm.
Like that to me could be a no brainer. What artist doesn't want to get more fans in the market that they're already coming to, and then get a few extra $100 and you'll pull up to them and set up in their green room. He literally has to just sit here and pregame
and talk about
shit,
himself.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a no brainer. Like, this is the type of thing where I've said yes to, I think, every podcast I've ever been asked. I probably done. This is my fourth one this month, actually.
Yeah, I realized you were on Nick, Stationary Astronaut, Austin, and then
I did one in L.A.
Okay,
with I forget what the name of it. It was like 10 minutes long.
Yeah, just a quick in and out.
Yeah, it was like an in and out. But then this one, and I always say yes.
Sweet.
Why wouldn't I want to go talk about my story and myself, and then provide value for people? And like, I think that this is such a brilliant idea, and it's coming around to where like podcast is like becoming trendy. Like, I was on Tim Ferriss, like,
you were on Tim Ferriss
6 years ago. No, not Tim Ferriss.
Oh.
Yeah, dude. Sorry, I wish. Yeah. No, that is, yeah. No,
I need
sorry.
To be a better listener as a podcaster myself.
No, that was
myself.
My fault, because I did say on.
Yeah, okay.
But no, I was, like, listening to Tim Ferriss, like, 6-7 years ago, like, listening to different podcasts and stuff. Me and one of my buddies, Christian, we used to always, like, listen to these different podcasts when it was, like, you were nerdy if you listen to podcasts.
Yep.
And now it's, like, such a trendy thing.
Yeah.
And this is, like, the perfect time for you guys to be, like, really start to invest and like take off.
I agree.
So I'm really stoked for you guys.
I think there's a lot there, and we're excited to talk more about it off air, because I think there's something there. And kind of going off that trend of you providing value to our listeners, and that's exactly what you're doing. Who was someone in the music industry when you're out there in LA, or maybe later, a little bit later on, that offered their hand and was a huge like guiding light and kind of helped you navigate through those tough trenches?
I don't know. I don't feel like I've ever had like a real mentor to like just say, hey man, like you got talent, here's what you need to do, and like here's the things to avoid. I haven't really had that, but I've had different artists that I've worked with and different producers and stuff like that give me some like great advice. And I always talk about this dude, Sammy Adams. He is the coolest person ever. He's the nicest dude. I thought he was going to be just a douchebag when I like first decided to go on tour with him. But he's just the coolest dude, and we still keep in touch all the time. And he's someone that gives me amazing advice. Always has a, you know, open ear, and like takes the time to like hit you back. And he's, I don't know if he's just always on his phone or whatever, but he texts back faster than my girlfriend. It's insane, because most people look and be like, I don't want to like text back right away and be thirsty. He doesn't give a shit about anything like that. He'll text me back like, shoo, and it just comes right back, which is like makes it nice. But he gives me some of the best advice, I think.
Dope. That's awesome. Yeah. So when did you go on tour with Sammy?
Well, I did four different tours with Sammy in the last like year and a half. And so let's see.
In the last year and a half, like wow.
Yeah.
Congrats.
So I think the last leg ended in January.
Okay.
I wanna say. Yeah.
What's it like going on tour with like a big name like that?
Nuts. It is nuts, because it's like, dude, you go to these towns, right, and you're the coolest thing that's happening for, you know, hundreds of miles, because you're just in the middle of nowhere a lot of times with these little college towns. It was like college tours.
Okay.
So you're going to different schools, and like you're Drake for a night because there's nothing else going on.
Yeah.
And so it's such a blast, and just being able to perform my own music with like all my buddies, and you're just road tripping for, you know, a month at a time, just eating shit and drinking too much. And dude, it's It's legendary.
Yeah,
it's
that's kind of what I'm. That's what I wanted to ask you too. Like, you know, following the. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like going on tour as Pharaoh, like, mm-hmm. is that a goal of yours first and foremost?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
With that being said, do you think you'll be able to handle like the tour life? Already having a little bit of taste of it with a big name.
Yeah, I definitely think.
Yeah,
so.
He's like, because
I'm dude. I can turn it on and turn it off. Like when it's time to be business mode, like I'm all about business. I'm never late to sound check. I make sure everything is on point, exactly how I want it. If it's not, we do it again. If it's not, we do it again. Like I'm like, because I'm the one that has to be up there in front of 4,000 kids that don't even know who I am yet. Right. You know what I mean? So yeah. I have one shot to be a firework up there, get in, get out, and like have a blast. So everything has to be on point. It's not till after when, you know, we cut loose and like start having fun and all that type of thing. And when I feel myself start to get sick or like, you know, you start getting a cold, it's like, all right, it's time to dial it back. And like my buddies might still go out and I'll hang back and sleep or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's always music first, business first, and then partying and all that stuff second.
Yeah. So were you on like a tour bus or did you stay in like hotels along the way?
So one of them we were on a bus and then the other three we were just staying in Airbnbs, which we would like, dude, I think we're all banned from Airbnb. Like we would throw these huge parties in these different cities. And like, so one time we were in, I can't remember what city we were in, but this dude had Ring, you know, that Shark Tank little doorbell like Ring, and it's like, yeah. motion activated, so they get like, gotcha. A 15 yep. second video. And so the guy, I'm like, he calls me and I'm like, everyone like quiet down da, da, da. And I'm like, hello, this is James. And he's like, are you having a party at my house? And I was like, absolutely not. He goes, well, I have video footage of about 15 young women walking into my home. And I was like, oh shit. And I was like, yeah, you know, I was just having them over there from college, just to come visit, but I can send them out. And
we're like, eating pizza.
Yeah, no, and he like reported us and like all this stuff, and like, oh dude, it was gnarly. But that was like, I wish I had that video because it was just chicks
scrolling through.
You know what I'm saying? But I mean, I'm pretty good on tour. I don't dip.
I cannot wait to send you this this video later on when you're actually on tour.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. we'll check back in.
Yeah, perfect.
The I guess back in one more time. How did you get in touch with Sammy?
Me and Sammy at the time had the same manager.
Oh, okay.
So Max Zotz, he's still my manager, and I think he still does some stuff with Sammy, but Sammy's kind of taking a step back. He's on Beats One Radio. He has like his own show on there now.
Okay.
And so Max was like talking to Sammy, like, hey dude, I want to bring Pharaoh on tour. I want Pharaoh to come on tour. And I don't think Sammy was like about it for a while, but eventually he was like, sure, like have him pull up and do like 8 dates or something like that. And we were just boys after that. And so he brought me out, you know, Zombie Pub Crawl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was on Zombie Pub Crawl, not this last year, the year before that, like brought me out on stage. We did our Damn. Song together. Like we got a couple of different records together. And it came to my studio. I've never seen someone do as much drugs as Sammy and be normal. Like,
really?
It was like, dude, you are a veteran.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm saying, like, so I at my recording studio, I don't know if any police watch this. If they do, I'm fucked. But I'll keep, like, different stuff there, right, for whoever comes through.
Hospitality purposes.
Yeah, exactly. For mm-hmm. And it'll sit on my shelf for however long, right? Because I don't really dabble when I'm making music and stuff. I might have a couple beers and with my producer or whatever, just cutting loose, but I don't like get fucked up when I make music. But I'll keep different stuff there that, you know, whoever comes through, whatever your vice is, I can provide. And I mean, he must have touched every single thing and was still in there like cutting verses, like making music. I was like, dude, this is crazy. Like, this is crazy.
Sammy but, Adams, who would have thought?
Not me.
Yep.
I'll tell you that. That's but yeah, insane. that's the homie though.
Yeah, that's good, awesome. Dude. So when did you go from LA to New York? Was that like the direct is that the next step in the story, or mm-hmm. how did
yeah,
it
yeah, no, I signed a record deal with Sony.
Oh, nice.
And then so that's why I put out like my first official single.
Okay.
Is when I moved to New York. And that was really cool at the time, like to start off. It was really cool.
Yeah. It's not not anymore?
No. I got pretty fucked, man.
Okay.
Yeah. You ever been fucked with no lube?
Ty?
No.
Okay. Well, let me tell you what it feels like. So, I sign a record deal. I'm on the radio, like, in every state. Like, all over the radio. This song's called I'm on a Wave. I hate this song now, but at the time it was booming. I'm in all the clubs, like doing radio promotion, getting flown out to doing different shows, like everything paid for, da da da. And then the song wasn't performing as well on social or like on Spotify and the streaming platforms as I thought it would. And so I go to my management, like, hey, you know what's going on? And they're like, oh, you know, we just got to get more budget money from the label. Because I had like a $175,000 budget for one song, right? So I'm thinking, oh, this is going to boom. Turns out these guys were taking money off the top. So the label would say, you know, here's $5,000 for, you know, this type of promotion. They would spend like $800 on the promotion and then keep the rest of the money.
Oh, man.
And they did that. They ran up a bill of like $45,000 that was supposed to go into my pocket, and they kept it. And so I had to lawyer up. And this girl, Paula Bloomquist, who I went to high school with, her mom is a lawyer. And so she did a little pro bono, helped me out like off of a Facebook message.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I was like, dude, Paula, like, can your mom possibly help me? Like, I can't afford a lawyer. Like, I was eating once a day. I was completely broke. Because these guys weren't giving me any of the money I was making. And they were just keeping it all. I'm like, how can you come to my apartment and like be around me knowing I can't fucking even afford food? And you're stealing tens of thousands of dollars from me over the course of like 3 or 4 months. Like, that was so nuts to me. But that was like when things got dark.
Damn.
As far as that.
Yeah, I don't really understand much of the music industry. And like our good friends, Yam House, they're a local band here, and they're just they're grinding right now. And that's kind of like the only music industry knowledge I have. And their technique is super creative. But when it comes to like the managerial aspect, you hear so many stories like that to just drive you insane. People just aren't very trustworthy and loyal and have a lot of just class.
And money changes everything.
Yeah, sure.
Like, it really does. Because people, you know, and I don't know what they had going on, like what drove them to have to steal money, right? You know what I mean? Everyone has their own things going on. And so I try and be slow to pass judgment, even when someone does something blatantly wrong, even towards myself personally. So I try and be slow to pass judgment, but that was just so fucked to me. And you're just a, you know, you're young and naive, and you got this chance to, like, you're so close to your dream. You know what I mean? I'm like up on Power 105, like these huge radio stations I've seen since I was a kid. You know, being with like, you know, Busta Rhymes in my studio session and like these New York legends. And I'm like, dude, like, this is so cool. I don't want to rock the boat and be like, hey, where's my money? You know what I mean?
Right.
Thinking that long term, I'm going to make way more than maybe something fishy is going on right now. But yeah, things went south. It was tough.
Damn. So from there, you say you don't like that song anymore. It's a decent song. Give yourself some credit.
I didn't even like it when they put it out. I was really mad that that's the one they chose.
Okay.
I was like, dude, this song is so whack to me. But it was like doing well. So
yeah.
Whatever.
So you weren't questioning it. Yeah. But from that time where, you know, you run out of budget, you're realizing you're getting fucked, you lawyer up. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is like thing after thing after thing.
Yeah.
How did you respond?
Dude, it was such a hard hit to my ego, because I was like, I gotta leave, right? I was getting threatened. These are like some of the people that they had around them were like some real like
gangbangers
in New York. And New York's a different type of city. People aren't like messing around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's I don't know if you guys have spent much time there, but like people don't fuck around in New York. It's a very like serious, dangerous city if you're on the wrong side. Right.
Yeah.
And so I ended up being like, dude, I gotta bounce. And so I flew back home to Minnesota, moved in with my parents, like after being D1, being on the radio, like huge recruit, being a rap star, like getting paid thousands of dollars just to show up places, to being like, dude, I have no career, football's over, I'm out of this music deal, living in my parents' basement with no money, no prospects, nothing. I was like, I don't know what the fuck to do. So I started making more music. And then that's when I started sending it to Max Zotz. I knew him through a friend in New York.
I
wanted him to manage me so bad, and he wouldn't for like a year. Till I just kept sending him music. And then finally, I think he came to one of my shows and was like, okay, this kid's got it. And then he called me after that and was like, all right, I get it. I'll manage you. and then the Sammy Adams stuff, and then I started doing more releases and just going independent, and then in the meantime focusing on business stuff, because I was like, I don't ever want to be broke again. I hated it. I grew up poor, then I moved in with the Harringtons, had some stability, and then I was poor again. And like, I hated that feeling of like not having money, not knowing how to, you know, where I was going to pay my rent and stuff like that. And so, and the, concurrently to the music stuff, I've taken the business stuff just as seriously.
I like that. So in terms of like, cause what it sounds like too, I don't know, like, I know it definitely has to do with money in terms of like, yeah, dude, if you're broke, that shit sucks. Money's opportunity.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, dude, you probably weren't a crazy shock. You know, you mentioned like your ego, like, I mean, going from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows, what did you kind of do to bring yourself out of those lows? I know you said make music, but was there something more than that that brought you out?
I've always been someone that's fueled by like having an enemy. Like, I don't, ever since I was a kid, I don't know if like what it is, but having an adversary or someone I'm trying to prove wrong always makes me grind so much harder. And so that's kind of what I had in that moment when I'm back home, not knowing what to do. I was like, fuck those guys. Like, if they believed in me, they wouldn't have stole from me. Like, I'm going to show them what's up. And so, like, I just kind of like got in this psychosis of being like, I have to make the best music I've ever made. Mm-hmm. And I need to find a way to get people to listen to it. And so, I don't know. It wasn't like, I didn't let myself get in like a super depressed state and like just laying in bed, like, woe is me. That's never really been my personality. And so, dude, I got in the gym, started working out, and just started grinding on music.
I love that.
Cause like, I jumped right to it.
That's freaking awesome too. Cause you know, I feel like, I mean, speaking for Andrew and myself and a lot of different people, that probably listen to this podcast, like when you graduate college or you finish your sport or you like get fired from something or, you know, something bad happens that's changing your life, like, it's an identity shift. And like, while Absolutely. That is a tough time, it is such a cool time because it's just, you have like this blank sheet, this blank mold that you can make into whatever you want.
Yeah.
You can sit down and do absolutely nothing, but at the same time, you can mold that into your next song, your next opportunity, your next show, and then your next manager.
And that's something that people need to realize, is that you have to stop giving a fuck about your identity, because your identity is only as you're perceived by the people around you, right? That's what your identity is, right? It doesn't matter what you think inside. It's how you're perceived by others. Mm. And, you know, I don't know who said it. You are only as you're perceived, right? Some philosopher said that.
Sure.
And so, and I truly believe that. And so everyone's so wrapped up in like, I'm this person, like I'm a football player, I'm a rapper, I'm this and that. And like, they don't take the time to actually think about like who they are as a human being and realizing no one actually gives a shit. Like, if I quit rap today, no one's going to really give a shit. I might have some fans. They'd be like, oh, I miss his music. But there's so much out there. Like, no one cares. And everyone, like, is so scared to take leaps and change paths because they're so afraid of being a failure, like, in the eyes of a bunch of people who are so caught up in their own lives that they don't really give a fuck about your life. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I battle with that for so long, like, quitting football and, like, taking a step back from music for a while, like, all that stuff. I'm always so concerned with, like, I mean, I don't want people to think I'm whack, or I don't want people to think like, you know, I'm a loser and da da da. It's like, dude, no one fucking cares. They really don't. Like, there's, life is so hectic that your like your career change is not on anybody's radar except for like your parents and your really close friends. And those people love you regardless. So at the end of the day, you have nothing to lose by starting fresh and doing something new.
You're spot on. I just got a life coach, and she challenged me to like write down five people's opinions that I care about that like bother me every day, or something along those lines. Because I told her how I was struggling with like people having these judgments on me, and I couldn't get over it, and from getting fired and ending a relationship, all this stupid stuff that I couldn't get out of my head. And she said, write down five people. And the people I wrote down were like my parents and my best friends, one of my football coaches, my brothers. And I told this to Declan, and Declan goes, dude, those five people and those are those five categories of people will care about you no matter what. Absolutely. Their opinions don't matter because you are a great person and you're trying your best to succeed. You might fail time and time again, but those people that you just mentioned will always believe in you. So I challenge you to pick five people that you might not interact with on a daily basis and look at those people like the Joe Rogans of the world who mm-hmm. are the ultimate podcasters, and he's doing what he loves every single day. He's hanging out with the people that he loves and he has a great family support. Shamelessly. He's like, look at those people and see, like, if you are able to embody a daily routine that would, if Joe were to walk in and be like, hey, good for you doing what you love.
Yeah, what's this back pocket thing? If Joe walked in today, like, what would he think? He's like, well, he's
really cool.
Yes. You guys built a studio out of your house and you talk to your friends.
Yeah, dude, and I do the exact same thing with music. It's like, so I always struggled with pandering to, like, a bunch of people that don't give a shit, right? Pandering to the fans, pandering to what I think will stream well on Spotify in terms of the type of music that I make.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been like, you know, I just want to make sure that this is listenable and likable and, you know, all that stuff. And I think it hindered my creative process. And so I got to a point where I was like, I just want to make music that I like. And if like Stevie Wonder walked in or Michael Jackson or Elton John, would they be like, I get it. You know, I get it. This is cool. Like, maybe not their cup of tea because it's such a different genre and such a different era, but be like, this is dope. Like, my song, Something to Prove, it's got, like, a rock vibe, and, like, we played every instrument, every sound you hear. Like, we're in the microphone clapping, like, doing, like, little things, scratching a notebook to get, like, these little sounds that we created. And I feel like that's the type of music that I'm, like, the most proud of, that I feel like I could play for, you know, Ray Charles and be like, he'd be like, oh, okay, this is cool.
Yeah, he's
this
doing what he cool loves, vibe. Man. And he cares about it deeply.
Yeah.
He's not doing it for the majority.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's dope.
Yeah, you can't pander to the masses. Mm-hmm. You just got to do what you want and be shameless about it. I love the Joe Rogan reference.
Yep.
I watch him all the time, and I'm like, dude, you know how many people he's around that are like anti-weed, anti-left, anti-right, you know, all this different stuff, and he's just Joe Rogan.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, this is me, love me, hate me. I don't care. Plus, you can kick majority of people's ass, probably.
Yes. You know,
my buddy recently had dinner with him in Las Vegas.
Really?
And he was like, dude, Joe Rogan is huge. Like, he's, like, way jacked, like, more jacked than you think he would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and this is someone, like, who doesn't hype things up. He's very pessimistic and very, like, two feet to the ground. But he was like, this dude is fucking jacked.
Yeah, and he's like 5'8", 5'9". Yeah. So he's that Italian just
yeah, dude.
Jacked.
I love Joe Rogan.
Oh, he's the man.
Yeah, he's great.
The well, it's crazy too about how hard he works. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's really cool, and you know, back to both of you guys' points of not really caring about what other people think, but at the same time, like, look at what you're doing. Like, you're making music, putting yourself out there.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredibly vulnerable. We've recorded over 200 podcasts. That's incredibly vulnerable. But like Joe doing that same thing and hearing his experiences like through Sober October last year with all of mm-hmm. his buddies, and they're working out like 6, 7, 8 hours a day. And I'm just mm-hmm. like, I personally can never see myself do that, but I sure as hell want to get to a point where, you know, I'm that dedicated and disciplined in my own life because mm-hmm. that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
It's crazy absolutely. To think about it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Blows my mind. But going more towards the present and future of Pharoah.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you mentioned on AOG, Austin Harrington's podcast, which, by the way, everyone go listen to that one if you want to learn a lot about Pharoah, how the hell Pharoah got as jacked as he did, because it's all because Austin Harrington, his brother.
Yeah, there you go.
But I want to kind of ask, like, where you kind of envision yourself going to this year end, or mm-hmm. what kind of goals or things you're trying to accomplish at this point?
Man, I got so many different things in the works
there you go.
I'm excited about. And, yeah, I feel like I definitely have, like, gotten to a point where I'm like, all right, I need to dial back. I need to delegate. I need to, like, really focus on a couple things that are really important to me, because I've been spreading myself so thin lately.
Mm.
But one thing I'll announce for the first time, I don't think I've said this anywhere publicly.
Breaking news.
Breaking news on the back pocket is I started a band, and we're dropping a full project already recorded in Los Angeles. We're just finishing the visuals, and it's called Russell Ave. I grew up on Russell Avenue North in Minneapolis, and the band is called Russell Ave. And so I'm super excited about that. I've been working with a few different labels.
Who's in the band?
So it's two Minnesota kids. One's my brother, and one is a kid named Dex Barstad. He's an insane guitar player, like
whoa.
Sick. And he actually produced a bunch of my music, Amanda Bynes, something to prove, all this stuff. So he's a producer, engineer, guitar player. He's an incredible musician. I always make my best music when he's in the room. And so
and you're the lead singer?
Singer, songwriter. Mm-hmm. I make a bunch of the music. Okay. I sit and produce. We all like have music minds. My brother's an incredible drummer. He's drummed with Kendrick Lamar, Wiz Khalifa. Like, he's been a professional drummer for a long time. Oh, so sick. He's insane. Together, we've done 1,000 shows. We just haven't done any shows as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
So Russell Av, I think our first song is going to drop first week of October. It's called You Make Me Feel Like Somebody. And it, I'll have to play it for you guys after.
Oh, beautiful. I got to make sure this podcast, it's going to be released.
What's next week? The 30th?
It's going to be released on the 1st. Okay. No, the 30th. Monday the 30th, right?
Yeah, the 30th. Yeah. So the next day.
Coming yeah. Right tomorrow. After. Yep. Yeah.
Tomorrow.
Right
Wait. After. Is there 30 days in September?
Yes, I just looked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you know that rule?
Yeah, the skipping through your knuckles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How does it go, Ty?
I always do it where, so I only do it with one hand. I see you have two hands up, but you start on like the, if you put the fist towards you, start on the leftmost knuckle, and you go January, February, March, April, and every knuckle that's, like every part that's high is 31 days, and when you go down, it's 30 days. But then at the end of your hand, you have to hit it twice to go back. So it's January, February, March, April, May, June, July.
Snake draft.
August on that same one.
August gets two picks.
Yep. Yep. September is 30. October is 31.
Nice. That's a cool little trick.
Thank you.
Actually,
that's what
I like that.
Yeah, you learn something new on the back pocket.
There you go. Dude.
Like when I go to like fancy dinners, fundraisers, and that type of thing, you know, there's so much cutlery and so many different plates and bread and drinks and stuff. And so I go like this, and I'm like, the D is my drink, the B is my bread.
Yep.
And I'm like, that's how I can know so I'm not grabbing someone else's shit because it's all so close together.
Yeah.
You'll see me under the table like.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
No, yeah, I learned that one in cotillion class, dude.
Oh, really?
My mom made me go to cotillion class when I was in fifth grade, dude.
Yeah.
And they would like host this at like rented out those big rented out spaces in like hotels or museums.
Okay.
And they'd put on like a whole nice meal, kind of like what you're explaining. And then they would teach you how to dance, and there would be like sixth grade boys and sixth grade girls, and you'd have to learn how to like square dance and do all these other dances. Dude, what an
Do you remember anything from it?
Other than like this? The B's and the D's, not much else, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
no. Well, if you ever get a refresher, you'd be a killer wedding date. You should put that out there. Like,
dude. Oh,
I know this. Like, that's like perfect wedding date material. I bet you look good in a suit, too.
Yeah, I look pretty decent in a suit as long as like I fit myself a little bit to them. Because, like, dude, ever since I was done with football, like, I was a large, kind of pushing an XL. I had a thick-ass neck here. But anyways, like, I lost, like, 25 pounds, and so, like, none of my clothes fit me.
Yeah.
So I started selling them all on Poshmark. Mm-hmm. That worked out pretty well. So now I got to turn and burn it for new clothes to fit me. And
then
become a wedding day. I can have a conversation with anybody. Not going to brag there. I can have a conversation with a lot of people.
Yeah, it's an impressive trait of yours.
I'm sure you guys know a lot about a lot, too, from all the different people you've had on. And
which is kind of, I don't know how valuable that is, but.
That's super valuable to be able to have a conversation with anybody, even just on a surface level.
Yeah.
Like, and not surface sound level. Like I an think, idiot.
Yes.
Like,
we don't know a lot about a lot. We know just enough about a lot to have the conversation.
A little about a lot.
A little bit a lot. I think that would be our average quality, just knowing just the baseline of how to maintain a conversation.
Yeah.
And that's
on Susan.
With Aunt Susie, so she feels welcomed and warmed.
Yeah, at her own wedding.
100%, yeah.
I love that.
And, I mean, that's our average quality, being these conversationalists at times. But I'd love to ask you, Farrah, what your average quality is. So this is something you do well at times, and other times not so well. At the end of the day, it's your average quality. So, Jimmy Farrah, what is your average quality?
My average quality, something I do well at times and not so well at other times?
Yes.
But I'm just consistently average at?
Yeah. The other way I would explain it is like it's something that you care about, but you're not as good as you want to be at it yet.
And that's kind of how we let in as we're conversationalists. We're podcasters, but we're not the best podcasters out there. Every day we're trying to get a little bit better.
Yeah. All right. I think probably my eating, my dieting, that's something that I know so much about. I'm very well informed and I'm really crazy about it sometimes. And then other times I just eat like a slob and I get super dark. And like, you want to talk about me getting depressed? That's when I get depressed, is when I like eat like shit, miss a couple workouts, and I'm just like, I self-loathe and a lot of self-hatred comes out.
Oh, yeah.
Which, hot take, self-hatred is the key to success.
Yo, what?
Hot take.
That is too hot for me. Well, I'm out.
No, I wouldn't say self-hatred followed by accountability.
Boom.
Okay.
I'm right? telling you, because complacency is the death, right? When you're, it's self-hatred is just, you know, a way to get people to click on it, right?
Yeah, that's the clickbait.
But yeah, exactly. But really, it's like, you know, you're in a position where you're so uncomfortable with your situation, right? You hate what you're doing, or you hate the situation that you're in. And when you're uncomfortable, that's what's going to breed change, right? Just like you tear your muscles to build them up. And, you know, when you're comfortable and you're complacent, that's when you're dying, you're losing. And so when I say, like, self-hatred is the key to success, like, I will get so down on myself about, like, missing workouts that I'll go full psycho mode for, like, a month. And, like, anytime I, like, have a meta view of myself and I'm doing a self-assessment and I'm unhappy with a certain aspect of my life, it makes me go 2 times, 3 times harder in that lane and always, like, breed success.
Mm. All right. I vibe with that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking on the golf course when I freaking shank 3 shots in a row and then I keep going, oh, I fucking suck.
Yeah, but then if you took that and then for the next month you just golfed religiously because you wanted to get better,
mm-hmm.
that's where it's the key to success.
That's where the tides turn.
Right, because you get so upset with yourself that you're like, never again.
Yep. Yeah. You know, or we're coming up on the turn on Sunday when we were golfing with Austin Harrington.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Austin's, you know, just like yourself, very well versed in this health industry.
Yeah.
And Andrew, you want to tell him what you were craving and why you're playing so bad?
Yeah, I got a little hangry at the end of the first nine, and Austin was in my cart and I just go, dude, I need a 9:30 in the morning turn hot dog.
Yeah. a hot dog at 9:30 in the morning. The whitest thing I've ever heard in my fucking life. Oh my God!
I was like, I just need a hot dog from the clubhouse, and I'll be able to straighten out my drive. And Austin looks at me, and goes, "Dude, I'm reading this book right now, and it told me that the people that live the longest have eat the most, the smallest amount of animal meat." And I go, "Oh, that's pretty cool to know, but I'm still craving this hot dog." Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes us sick people, as we know exactly what we're doing wrong. That's why food like has such an impact on me,
because
I know what I'm doing wrong. And I still do it. Like, I'll just rip through a whole pack of Starburst, like, playing Call of Duty. And I'm just like, dude, like, that is so gross.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so good. You know what I mean? Good. Like, God, dude.
Dude, I made a big old dent in a family size extra toasty Cheez-Its this weekend. Dude.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, shortly thereafter, the self-hatred, Decky self-hatred, I booked every single day 5:30 workouts at Alter. So
exactly,
it's like, that's what it takes.
Self-hatred is the key to success. Told you.
You say it, dude.
Get dark, baby. Yeah,
run a campaign on
that. Yeah, let yourself. Yeah, exactly. We'll see how well it does, right?
I'll post on LinkedIn. Literally, yeah. I'll clip that one out and post on LinkedIn. We'll see how it does.
I bet it gets clicks. Self-hatred is the key to success.
Oh, man. Well, I had something I was going to say. Either way, bag it, dude. Yeah. Next question. What's not in my back pocket is remembering the next question, but what is in my back pocket is consistency,
mm-hmm.
where I'm showing up every single day, just grinding my ass off. Yeah, I'm a little burnt out. Yeah, I'm a little tired, but that's what I got in my back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
What would be in your back pocket? This is something where when pressure becomes stress, anxiety is rising, what kind of mental attribute or quality or thing do you rely on to come out on top?
I think – I don't know how to, like, articulate it in a way that actually – captures what it is that goes on in my brain, but I have this way of seeing the world for what's actually going on and not letting, like, emotions and other things, like, cloud my vision and understanding of the current situation. And so you'll, like, my girlfriend or my brother or anyone, they always hear me, or they'll tell me, like, oh, you just see what's actually going on sometimes, instead of, like, you know, having my own opinions and things weigh into the situation. And so I don't know if you just call it being rational or what, but, like, I'll look at a situation and be like, here's what's actually going on and here's what needs to change. I'm very calm about it. I'm not a panicky person. I don't get very worked up easily. Like, I'm a very, like, mellow, level-headed person in, like, pressure situations. It's probably why I kick Austin's ass all the time in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But in my back pocket, I think it's just being rational. And, like, just analyzing the situation and being okay when the outcome isn't in my favor, because I'm looking at it, I'm like, there is just no outcome that's going to be in my benefit, and that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Mm.
What is that? Shout out to Jim Carrey.
Bruce Almighty.
Yeah, there you go.
That's just the way the cookie crumbles. I think it's a little practicality, a little Gary V. Mm-hmm. Just kind of understanding the situation at hand and how you play a role into it.
And being able to look at it from a meta view and mm-hmm. like looking down on yourself. Like, I don't feel like people do that enough. Everyone just looks through their own eyes and they don't ever just think about, like, imagine if you were looking down at this plan, this scene that's playing out, right? So sometimes, and my girlfriend thinks this is really weird, but I'll talk about myself in third person, like to myself, when I'm weighing a decision. And I'd be like, and this sounds weird, but there's been studies that have been done that show that people who think about decisions in third person are much happier with the outcomes and the choices that they make, because then it's almost like you're writing your own screenplay for your life, right? Or writing your own book about your life in real time. So I'll think to myself, like, James wants to hit snooze right now and go back to bed, or he can get up and work out with his brother at 5 a.m. And, like, I'll say, like, my name, you know, in third person. It sounds really weird, but it's makes it such an easy decision. So when it's like a no-brainer, it's like, of course, I'm not going to be a lazy bum, like, when you put it in perspective like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really weird thing, but you guys should try it out.
Yeah, it's and a perspective just, change.
Yeah, it makes you look at it from a meta view, and so you're looking at what's going on. You're not thinking about, like, your current emotional state
yeah.
or, like, how you're feeling. You're like, these are the two decisions. Which one do you choose?
Mm-hmm.
Or which one does the character choose? Whatever, right?
Yeah.
But it helps me make good decisions consistently, especially early in the morning. That's where, like, if you kill the first yes. couple hours, like, then you have a pretty good day usually. And that's where I battle the most.
The victory hour.
Yeah, the victory hour.
The I think what's really cool about that is, like, a lot of that is timeless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not only taking a perspective change outwards to look at the current present situation, but at the same time, you're evaluating your longevity or long-term legacy
mm-hmm.
based on that decision.
Yeah.
Right.
Small, tiny little,
like, you're looking at it as like the James Farrow timeline. Like, mm-hmm. okay, you've done all these great things or bad things up to this point. You're now faced with your next decision. Here's where you want to go. Here's where you don't want to go. And maybe if you don't do anything, this is where you could stay.
Yeah. James is deciding to go to the gym and be productive or sit here and play Call of Duty.
Right.
And, like, when you say it like that, it's disgusting to think that you would choose the
Call of Duty. The latter.
Yeah, like, yeah. You know what I mean? It just puts it in this weird perspective. But I'm not kidding. There's been studies that have been done. I don't know what they are off the top of my head. But you should check it out. It's pretty cool. I read all about it.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Amazing. Man. I love that.
Good perspective in your back pocket goes a long mm-hmm. way. And one perspective that Mary Lavore gave us,
mm-hmm.
she sat here in June this year and said, you need to have Jimmy Farrow on your show. And we said, challenge accepted.
Yeah.
This is a part in the show, the back end of our show, where you've been able to experience now an hour of back pocket.
Uh-huh.
So we're curious if you have someone inside the Farrow network that you would be like, they'd be an awesome guest. They'd be an awesome conversation to have with the back pocket guys. Mary led us to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious if you have anyone else that you want to continue the train of this little challenge we got going.
Let's see. God, I got a pretty cool network. So what type of people do you guys usually have? Anyone?
Yes.
Any type yeah. of...
We love to have people in the Twin Cities.
Yep.
So we can have them in the studio. That's been like 99% of our guests this season. Mm-hmm. But people that really want to share their story, whether they're like the Austin Harringtons of the world coming on and on
one.
The come up.
Okay. I got one. Mm-hmm. His name's Matt Williams. He's one of my older friends. He owns his own company. Have you ever been to the Target Center, Jack Links? You see that? Like,
yes. Yeah.
Right. His company built all that out. He like does all the build outs for like Red Bull, all these sick companies. He's got great stories, super high energy guy, gives me some of the best advice I've ever had. Amazing analogies and metaphors. Like, he's got this thing called Stony Shores, where he's like, you build your castle and you can either have sand and it gets eroded by people's opinions and they're pulling at you and all this stuff. He's like, or you can have stony shores. It's not as nice to look at, but your house is going to be safe.
Mm.
And like, he has explained it like in context, right? But he just has these like such cool stories. He's got an amazing family. So I would say Matt Williams, if you guys can lock him in, and he might give you guys some Vikings tickets too. He's got
right.
season tickets.
Right. Challenge accepted.
Yeah, so I know you can squeeze out some Vikes tickets too.
is the company construction? Is he like?
No. So I still am grasping what he does.
Mm-hmm.
So they create environments.
Gotcha.
Is how he
feng shui
it.
Guy.
Yeah, so like you wow. walk into like a hotel and like he makes them like so you feel like you're underwater and like You know, he's got these like books that he's just like showing me of the stuff his company's done in different countries and all this stuff. Like they're killing. But it's still something I'm trying to grasp.
So are they like temp build outs or are they like full remodels from the inside?
I think he does both.
Yeah. It sounds like full remodels.
He puts on like shows. Mm-hmm. Like he's showing me this thing where they flew in like 4 tons of sand and had sand sculptures built in this like lobby area.
Sounds like so Firefest.
Someone came and like, yeah, right. But someone came and like carved out all this like, you know, sand that they flew in and stuff. Yeah. I don't know. It's really cool stuff.
Right on, man.
That sounds awesome.
He'd be great. I met him. I sat next to him courtside at a Timberwolves game. It's like some bald white guy. And he started talking to me. I'm like, get out of here, man. And then, you know, we started talking a little more. I was like, okay, he's cool. He's really cool. And he's like on the committee for, I think, Mr. Basketball.
Okay.
And like he's plugged in.
Sweet.
He's a really cool guy.
All right. I feel like this is a perfect guest.
Yeah. No, he's great.
This has got a lot of fun roots here.
Yes.
And at Back Pocket Corp. We're really excited about Matt Williams coming on the show. Mm-hmm.
And before I open the door to ask you some questions, Farrow, I'd love to give our intern right here, intern Ty, an opportunity to ask a question. You've been sitting there awfully patient.
Oh, he taught us the knuckle thing. Oh, yeah. That was cool.
Trying to provide value anyway.
That was absolute value.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I try. So I'm always curious, like going to concerts at like, you know, around like First Ave or at like Varsity, you always have these sort of these main guys come on, but then they usually bring like one or two openers.
And
it's always interesting when you're in a room full of college students and you don't always feel like these openers are like connecting with the audience. You kind of feel like it's falling flat. And honestly, I've been to a couple concerts where I just feel bad for them. I'm like, nobody's really picking up on the vibe. You've been in that situation before. What is it like as a performer where you draw a lot of your energy from the crowd, but the crowd's giving you nothing in return because they don't know who you are? Like, what is that like from
the I can't really speak to that
because you only get good vibes from
I've had one bad show.
Okay.
I've had one, and I mean I did a show in Boston and my computer froze mid show and it was still an incredible show. I did stand-up comedy for 6 minutes.
Stayed
up there and I got video footage of it. I'm over there just telling jokes. I'm like clowning on people in the crowd. I pulled someone up. We did a beer chugging contest where the whole crowd is like, chug, chug, chug.
Damn.
I got killed by some little fratty white kid. Yeah, of course. But, you know, you throw the beer in the crowd and it's just entertaining. Like,
yeah.
And that was no music. Mm-hmm. I did one song.
Dude, that
and
takes some
still,
serious
It was
balls.
Still so lit. Like, the crowd was like so hype. But I did one bad show, but I don't really think it had anything to do with me. I know it sounds narcissistic, but I was in San Diego, and I'd never been to this this club before. It was a, you know, small concert hall or whatever, and it was just a bunch of Mexican cholos, just a bunch of Mexican gangsters, and they stood in the front row like this.
Mean mugging you the whole time.
Didn't move. There was not one, like, young kid there. It was just a bunch of, like, 30-year-old dudes, and they just stood like that the entire time, and I was like, get me off this fucking stage, dude.
Yeah.
But, you know, for those guys that do experience that, number one, you have to realize no one cares about you being up there. No one's there to see you. Like, you got to put your ego out the door and realize that you're there to entertain. They're not there to hear your message. And they're not there to hear your music. You're there to entertain. And I always say, be a firework. Go up. Go fucking crazy. Go shorter than your set. Like, people try and stay up there and get as much time as they can. It's like, dude, if they give you 10 minutes, do 6. Go up. Be a fucking firework. Turn it up, get a lot of crowd interaction. Always pay homage to the person that's performing after, because then you'll get the whole crowd on your side. So I open for Mike Studd. I'll be, you know, I'll kneel down and be like, everybody get real quiet, and everyone will get real quiet and we'll kneel down, and then I'll go, Mike Studd, and they're on your side just like that.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you like Mike Studd? We like Mike Studd. You know what I mean? And that's it. Like, you just gotta realize no one's there to see you, and so just be entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome.
Pretty much it.
That's that back pocket mentality, keeping the perspective. Checking your perspective. Mm-hmm. That's dope. Love that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's some serious balls to have your computer die out on you and then do stand up and be like an entertainer, just totally on the whim of your feet.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I was like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Da, da, da. And my DJ's like, it's frozen. And I just turned to the crowd and I was like, yo, our computer fucking froze. But, you know, I'm still here, and I'm, you know, I was like, so we might as well just get fucked up. Who's got beer? And then people started, you know what I'm saying? Like, and then just kept, like, snowballing. And
that's awesome.
People were like, this dude's funny, and, like, he knows how to party.
He gets
it's, like, talking to chicks and, like, you making fun of people, and you know what I mean? It was just super natural. But at the same time, I was, like, looked back on it, And I was like, dude, I blacked out. I have no idea. Not like from alcohol, but I just mean like, you know, in like there's mentally. Certain football games and like plays where you're just like, I don't even remember doing that. And you watch it on film and you're like, oh, I was tight.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there's so many, like, you got the laser pointer. You know what I'm saying? There's so many times, like, in sports even.
Yes.
Where I'm like, I don't even remember, like, that touchdown run or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you see it on film and you're like, yeah, like, I remember doing it. But it's talk about flow state. Like, you're so in the zone that, yeah, I mean, you're not even thinking. And mm-hmm. that's kind of what it was like. I wasn't even, like, thinking about it. I was just fucking
natural
around.
It just came to you.
Yeah, and realize, awesome. And not taking yourself too seriously, because people are like, I'm off the stage then, you know, whatever. I'm like, all right, then let's just turn up, I guess. Like, I don't know,
I
you
love
just
it.
Can't take yourself too seriously. I've realized that, and I do that a lot. Mm-hmm. Not so much anymore, but I used to like be like everything has to be perfect, and now I'm just like, let's just go have fun, man. People are gonna vibe or they're not. And usually they are if you're having a good time.
Yeah, if you're authentic about it.
Yeah,
for sure. I love that. So this is a time of the podcast where we like to congratulate ourselves for asking great questions.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we did great on this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We fucking crushed this podcast.
Thanks for the snaps, man.
Yeah. You've been great yourself.
Yes, you have.
So we're going to give you an opportunity now. Do you have any questions for us?
I would love to ask you guys some questions.
Okay.
So let me think here. When you guys are considering moving to LA, is that just something that you're just snowballing, or is it a serious thing that you guys want to hammer down? And if so, what's the timeline?
Wow. I don't know if LA is necessarily like the pinpoint location, but we have spent the last year, literally we're over 100 podcasts since February when we started this third year of podcasting. And we've stuck to a business plan of just dominate the sandbox. Get every single person on the Twin Cities that you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Get all the big names. Talk to them exactly about what and have conversations with them. What we're realizing is that model can be duplicated anywhere. We were just walking through the idea of LA and ideas, names are popping into my head. We could do that in Colorado where I'm from or Chicago where Andrew's from. But I think there's something bigger there that we are trying to go after maybe and try and utilize our time and our podcast to kind of pursue that. What that is, we don't really know, but we know that our season 3 is ending November 21st. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to just, my challenge right now is to stay present, interviewing Pharaoh, understanding we're in this third story of a frat house that I live at. And we get to have these conversations. It's the coolest damn thing in the world. But what I know is like, we're going to build this thing to something. We're going to build this thing, this back pocket, into something special one day, and I don't want to lose this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot going through my head. There's a lot of things we're doing. We're doing 3 podcasts a week, but ultimately, man, like, stay present, but at the same time, have that James Farrell perspective of like, okay, dude, what decision can you make to get you to that next
point? Yeah, absolutely.
So anything else, Andy?
No, good answer, man.
Okay. That was a great answer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That was a great, and I got some stuff I'd love to talk to you guys about off air.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We don't want to give out the formula until we've executed.
Of course.
Amen to that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet. Okay, so last question?
Final question.
Unless you have any other questions for us.
I'll ask you guys a little later.
Okay,
perfect.
All right, what did you learn today from the time you woke up to the time of recording now? Very simple question.
What did I learn today?
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I learned about cryotherapy.
Mm. Yo.
Yeah. So I did my first like cryo chamber.
Did you go to
the zone by Lifetime?
I was in Lifetime. Yeah.
Okay. So this was the zone.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
The zone.
Who, do you know Clara?
No, it was a guy named Jake.
Dang.
All right.
We know Clara. She does marketing for the zone.
Okay. Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I learned a little bit about that. It was like negative 120 degrees. It wasn't as cold as I thought it was going to be. It was still very uncomfortable, and I was using a little Wim Hof breathing to get myself going. You know what I'm saying? Like, just trying to survive.
Find your flow state.
Yeah.
Dude, exactly. This kid, Andrew, did, like, full-on Wim Hof, like, all of sophomore year.
Yeah.
Just trying to find his flow state.
Oh, yeah.
Read his book. I was so in tune with Wim. The dude Wim.
Gnarly, right? So I learned about that. That's something that I learned today that I didn't know much about beforehand. I was walking past. I had a back injury last week, and I was like, you know, maybe I'll go on this a few times and check it out. And I thought it was pretty cool. I'll definitely go back.
Right. Sick, on, dude.
Yeah.
All right. Because I'm a little nervous with cryotherapy. I thought that's how women got pregnant for a little bit.
He did say that on the back end show.
Oh, what?
Yeah, he said that. He went live with that. And I don't know why. Input Andrew saying that here. We'll get that up. But did you have to wear socks and?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Socks, shoes, gloves, and shorts.
You don't want to be burnt like Antonio Brown.
Yeah, he did it for like 20 minutes. I was in there for 3 minutes. Yeah,
he's a knucklehead.
Yeah, it was, I mean, he's out of the league now. He's retired, baby.
He's done.
That's you think he's actually done?
No.
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 No chance.
Hard no.
Hard no.
All right, three hard no's.
What do you think?
All right, I think he might be out. I think he might get Colin Kaepernick'd. Where everyone's just like, you're not worth it. You're not worth the baggage.
Yeah, Tim Tebow kind of same thing.
Especially if he takes like a full season off. Like if he doesn't come back like with his tail between his legs, like I don't think he's gonna have a shot. I think people might just be done with him.
I was thinking the Bengals or the Cowboys.
That someone was the Patriots. Like that's who, before they even announced it, everyone was like, oh, he's for sure gonna go to the Pats. They take those guys that are troubled or whatever, and they give him a second chance, a second wind, whatever you want to call it. And I guess he didn't really blow it up.
Yeah, because it was the allegations.
Yeah, it wasn't like per se his fault. I mean, obviously his baggage,
previous
but
fault.
Like, yeah, exactly. It wasn't like he had a fight with Belichick or something. But yeah, I don't know. I think he's done.
Yeah.
And Austin has him in fantasy. I told him, hang it up, baby. Did you see he reported for class, Antonio Brown?
No.
He's got a college schedule. He starts October 21st.
Where is he going?
I don't know. What school? Do you know?
I don't know. I know he went to Central Michigan.
He's taking classes a full semester.
All right, Antonio.
He posted his class schedule.
No, I like that move. He'll be back in the league if he's going to college. Yeah. Get learned up a little bit.
Yeah, but hope so.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Phenomenal podcast.
Appreciate it. She could never pay someone else to say what she's trying to get across to you. She's a star gazer, and you can see the look in her eye. She's a dream chaser. She's made up her mind. Just watch her now. She says, I'm gonna have to try and catch her now before she's gone.